Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. Our purpose on Journey to Success Radio is to interview people who are making a positive difference in the world. We explore important aspects and areas of life, including business, sales, spiritual, mental, physical, relationships, disabilities, and many more interesting topics. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I'm also a regular contributor to their weekly newsletter. And in March of 2012, I spoke at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, where I shared the stage with Deepak Chopra, who was the keynote speaker for that event. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 44 years now. And in that time, I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, which makes me sound like a spider. And I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1". That's due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I had to take to fight my arthritis. And yet, despite those physical challenges, I'm well known for always answering amazing when asked how I'm doing. I'm also a senior research director for the Canadian Business Journal. We're a digital-only publication, and we're the official and only media partner of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. You can find out more about me at my website. It's Tom, the number 2, and Tall, T-A-L-L, .com. My guest today is an amazingly great woman, a good friend of mine, Tracy Jones, the president of Tremendous Life Books, and the daughter of the late, great Charlie Tremendous Jones. Tracy is an author, a publisher, a veteran, and as I said, daughter of the late best-selling author and motivational speaker, Charlie Tremendous Jones. Tracy is the president of Tremendous Life Books, which is the premier publisher of motivational leadership and business media. And Tracy's goal is to change the world one book at a time, very much similar to her dad's. After graduating from United States Air Force Academy, Tracy spent 12 years living all over the world and participating in various global deployments. She spent the next 5 years in Austin, Texas, working in the semiconductor industry, and then moved to St. Louis, Missouri, where she rounded out her operational expertise in several high-profile defense contracting positions. Tracy believes, like her dad always said, that you'll be the same person you are today, except for the people you meet and the books you read. She is the mother of 6 rescue pets and the co-author of 3 books, True Blue Leadership, The Top 10 Tricks from the Chief Motivational Hound, From Underdog to Wonderdog, and Saucy Aussie Living, Top 10 Ways to Get a Second Leash on Life, which she published with 2 of her canine kids. Her latest release is Being Tremendous, The Life, Lessons, and Legacy of Charlie Tremendous Jones. I received a copy that I purchased last week, and I love it. She had the privilege of spending 3 years scouring through his archived material after he went home to glory in October of 2008. His passion for sharing his love of books, continuous learning, and reading spilled out of him until his last breath. This book is really a course in how to live a tremendous life. And if you knew Charlie, this book will be a welcome remembrance. If this is your first encounter with him, you are in for a life-changing experience. Welcome to the show today, Tracy.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's an absolute pleasure to be here with you.
As you know, I loved your dad, and boy, one of his books in my early 20s, Life is Tremendous. Mm. Those words just jumped off the pages at me. That was my favorite, at least in the top 3 books, I think, ever since I read it. And then when I was able to eventually see videos, because I'm kind of old, we didn't have access to videos as much as we did 25 plus years ago. And so when I finally got to see video of him, Wow, that is a dynamic speaker, and you were warned if you sat in the front row, you were going to get a ginormous hug from your dad, weren't you?
Always, that's true. Hey, and tremendous, Life is Tremendous, you know, that came out in 67. I didn't realize you're the exact same age as me, so I like when you talk about before, you know, before we had all access to all this stuff, I can relate. But yeah, that continues to be one of the best sellers, and I still get notes just like you from people. I got one from a guy yesterday even that said, I read it in my 20s and it changed my life. So I really appreciate you bringing that up. I never get tired of reading it. And there's Life is Tremendous in Being Tremendous, so people can, you know, get familiar with it.
Exactly. And the parts that I almost always remember, laugh about, and think about when I think of your dad is when he spoke on topics, he spoke about the difficulties and challenges mm-hmm. that we face in life. And he was always famous for, you know, I come into my office every day and people want to quit. I say, you don't, haven't even started anything yet. You can't quit.
Yeah,
and
you can't quit.
Marriage, you know, marriage is tough and marriage is this. But, you know, despite the challenges, you know, he certainly gave a very positive message about, you know, pushing on, persevering, do the best you can. And so really nice when someone can talk about the hard things of life while you're laughing your head off at them doing it.
And I think that was his real appeal. He came from a really tough start, and there's a lot in the book that people that knew him won't have known about his early years that I just found out probably 2 days before he died when he shared a lot of stuff. He just didn't talk about those early years that much. But when I really saw where he came from, it really made sense why he was so joyous at where he was and had very little tolerance for people that were thumbsuckers, as he'd call them. You know, his
yeah.
whole thing, he was such a pragmatist, and he's like, listen, tough things are going to happen even in the most successful people and wealthy and smart people in life. You could choose to be, he'd call it miserable, which is the way most of the world is, or happy miserable, which means I'm going to get through this, I'm going to learn through this, this is going to make me better, this is going to grow me, so I'm going to embrace my problems because I'm going to morph into something better out of this. And that was how he lived his life. And that's, I think, why he was so powerful, because people are like, I got to find a reason why this is happening to me or why this continues to happen. I have to find a reason for this. And he's like, embrace it. This is here to make you stronger and realize nothing works. And once you embrace that, you can move on with life and be and enthusiasm can get you through almost any hardship you're going to encounter, as you know. And you live it too, Tom. You're a great example of it.
And enthusiasm is one of Napoleon Hill's 17 principles of success. Your dad had it. A friend mm-hmm. of mine that I think of who's extremely successful, if I had to pick one trait, it was enthusiasm. And
mm-hmm.
when someone's enthusiastic, try saying no to someone who's really enthusiastic about something. It's really difficult.
It isn't, and they say that now even when people are out hiring, you know, new kids out of college or even people in the world economy trying to get a job. People now and finally are really hiring for attitude, not so much aptitude, because if you have the right attitude, you can be taught anything. You can be really smart, but if you have that rotten attitude or know-it-all or, like I said, entitlement mentality, forget it. You're just not going to fit in no matter how smart you are. So, I mean, we see that more and more and more, just the unbelievable importance of attitude. And the only person responsible for your attitude is you. And I think that gives you a great deal of hope. And it's challenging and it's scary because it's like, you mean I'm responsible for everything in my life? Yeah, you are. But if you really grasp that and embrace that, boy, you know, life really takes on a whole new dimension, and you stop sucking your thumb and you stop, you know, hanging around with people that are going to be negative influences, and you get on with surrounding yourself, what my father said, with the people you meet and your books you read. This is, you know, it's trash in, trash out, or wonderful people and wonderful books. And you pack that stuff in your brain, and that's the kind of stuff that flows out of you. And then you attract because you're a magnet for it, and people are drawn to you. So
exactly.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
And someone we just lost recently in the last few weeks, the amazing Zig Ziglar. Mm-hmm. When I went to his Born to Win course in Texas, that was a major part of it, is that 80 to 85% of anyone's success in life, in any area, whether it's career, financial, family, physical, comes down to your attitude. So as you mm-hmm. said, hire for attitude, train for skill.
Exactly.
And the world knocks us down, though. You listen to TV, the news, the internet, you get all the bad news. So you really, really have to force yourself to throw positive input in there and ignore the negatives. And your dad was famous for his love of books. I don't imagine mm-hmm. he watched much TV because I think
no.
he had too much time for reading.
He did. He'd watch some of the old – he loved comedies. He loved, like, old Jackie Gleason and Sanford and Son. You know, he loved the old – he had such an unbelievable sense of humor. And so we watched a lot of comedies. But, oh, now – or the great preachers on TV. But, you know, when you really look at TV, it's either just Novocaine numbing your mind or it's somebody's point of view that's trying to brainwash you to believe something. Neither one of those is teaching us how to think for ourselves. So, sure, I'm not anti-TV, but when we were in when we were in high school, he took all our TVs and locked them up in the attic. And he said, listen, you can focus on working, reading, getting jobs, I mean, and because he was serious about it. And you just got to really be very guarded about what goes into your brain and what you let, what you watch and stuff like that. Because once it occupies your brain, boy, you gotta. It's you talk about Zig Ziglar. I love the quote that where he said, they say motivation doesn't last. Well, neither does bathing. That's why we recommend it daily. And if you are not constantly around, just like a marriage, if you're not constantly around other great couples that respect one another, and if you, then they're going to reinforce what you believe. If you're in a job where you're around a bunch of naysayers or management bashers, they eke into your head. You know, you just got to keep surrounding yourself and keep putting great stuff into your head. And you know what? It is around us, the negativity, but we have an option to turn it off and open that book on your Kindle or whatever you want to do, listen to those great audios. You do exactly what you want. Negative influences and naysayers and people trying to tell you you can't do something have been around since the dawn of man, and it's up to us to put them in their place.
Exactly. And your dad loved giving away books. Now, I do that as well, and I've met a lot of Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructors who love giving out books, and sort of we just all aim to be like your dad. Your dad just didn't give away a few books here and there. He gave away tons of books. And sometimes when you give a book away, it might be to someone who maybe it's a close relative or family friend or something, people who may have known you for years and they may not listen to what you tell them. But if you give them and share with them a great book, and come on, this is Christmas time. What a better way, a better time of the year to give a positive book that will, you know, encourage people to do their best in the coming year, rather than some of the crap that we buy people for Christmas. I have people on my list who don't need anything, and I don't want to walk around a mall to buy a scarf for my mom to add to a scarf collection, but a book can cause people to think and ponder and take action. And so, boy, what a great legacy your dad left about giving away books.
Well, he loved the Napoleon Hill Foundation. He loved the writings of Napoleon Hill. We still work closely with the Napoleon Hill Foundation, co-publishing. We love Don Green. He's part of our organization and just, with our board and just what you guys continue to do. But you're right. A book is beautiful because you take from a book exactly what you need. It's not like your boss or your spouse or your parent telling you how you should think or how you should act. A book is completely impartial, non-judgmental, and you take the beauty of a book is everybody takes whatever they want out of it. It speaks what everybody needs. And, you know, Dad used to not give away business cards because he said people throw business cards away. He'd hand out those little, common denominator success or think and grow rich because that really can make a complete difference in somebody's life.
I agree. And then who's going to throw out a book? But as you say, a business card, you may scratch on it or use it for something else or throw it out. But someone gives you a book, that's a tremendous gift. It's not just a business card. And so
and
I strive.
It is.
I love those little ones. I love your little books. Tell people about those little books because they're so amazing.
Well, they're called our life-changing classics, and there's a series of 24 of them. We got one on Einstein coming out that's going to print, and we've got them from Mark Sanborn and Breakthrough Speaking to Message of Garcia. Excuse me, Tom, I'm just still getting over this little bit of a cold. We have the old classics, John Wanamaker, Milton Hershey, Ronald Reagan, Patton's Principles, two of my father's speeches, and they're little booklets. And they sell for about $1.35 each, and if you get more than 50, they're less than a dollar a piece. And one is the common denominator of success, which continues to be our bestseller. For less than a dollar, you can get that. You hand that out, and what that says is that the only difference between a success and a failure, the only difference is that the success makes a habit of doing the things that a failure doesn't want to do. That's it. So if you want to be successful, that's all you have to do. Getting up, being disciplined, making calls, working out, eating right, reading books is as hard for a success as it is for a failure. A success simply says, I'm going to discipline myself to do it. So these little booklets are wonderful because some people, it's intimidating to read a book, or they may take a long time to read a book. Some of these, like Message of Garcia, the fourth read booklet of all time in the history of man, that you can read that in 10 minutes. And these are wonderful little tiny bites. People say, I don't have time to read. I know, but you can read and open these and read a couple great quotes just to salt your oats. You know, my father used to say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, but you can put salt in his oats and make him thirsty. And these little booklets just really give you a wonderful taste of the power of book. And, oh, I didn't know Patton said that about decision making, that even if it's wrong, make the decision now, because he knows if you wait till tomorrow, you won't make it. And it's just wonderful, wonderful, brilliant. And then you can get all these in a complete set. And you can mix and match and give them away. Some are more spiritual in nature. Some are more historical in nature. Some are more motivational in nature. And we also have audios that go along with them, too. But if you like looking at these on my blog, a lot of times I'll put a free one up on the free offers. And you can take a look at it and see if it's something that you like to read. But they're wonderful, wonderful little gifts. Even if you're leaving a tip for a waitress that has given you phenomenal customer service, just, you know, stick a couple dollars in there with that, and it really makes a wonderful impression.
Oh, I love the two of them, the common denominator.
Oh, it's my favorite. I could read
and
it
every
day. And
they're cheap, like, and as you said, like $1.35, like, you can
like
give
you,
those away.
I know. And, Tom, if those are the, I'm telling people, listen, if those are the only two things in life you read, your entire life, then you'll be at the 99th percentile, because Message Garcia is all about just go do it. Don't wait for somebody. When you everybody that's listening that has had somebody work for them know how many times it's the old principle of the person that draws the most wages is the person that just goes ahead and does what they need to do without being told. That's Message Garcia. If you can just be that person, that even if you don't wait for your boss, you just go do it. I mean, if you've ever had something like that on your team, they're worth their weight in gold. And then common denominator success is just about discipline. You don't have to be a genius or a visionary. You just have to see what needs to be done and be disciplined enough to do it. Well, I can do that. No matter how wealthy or healthy or smart or what your background or bloodline is, everybody can do that, which means you can be. You can shine, and it's just so powerful. I wish it could be mandatory reading for everybody. People order them every day, and I give them out left and right because they're so powerful.
And it's so powerful because so many people, I would imagine, would love to give away books. I just gave one to a coworker today, the Nick Wojcik one. Nick was born without arms or legs,
and his
book Unstoppable. But when you're giving away a book with that after taxes is like $25, $26, $27,
yeah,
you can't give 100 of those away. But
no,
with the common denominator or any of those little books, tremendous knowledge, less than a buck, even if you gave away 10 a week, it would never bankrupt you. It's such an easy thing to give away.
It is, and I got to tell you, there's one thing my father said, and I can remember hearing him saying, I was like, huh, I don't really understand this, but a couple other people since he passed have come to me and asked what he meant by it. He used to tell me that the more books he gave away for free, the more money he made. Now, what he meant by that is not that he gave stuff away to get something back, because he'd call that trading. If I give to get, that's not giving, that's trading. He would tithe away. Books were like his tithing. It was his sharing of what he learned, what made him was a book that made him who he was. So that was his tithing. And by seeding and giving this out, it just came back in droves to him. And that's really, really what he meant by that. And then, Tom, for your listeners, too, not just the Life-Changing Classics, but we have a sale page that's pretty unbelievable on the website, too, where we have books for, you know, $1, $2, $3. And if people are close by in our showroom, too, we have a 50-cent paperback, dollar hardback special area, which people go crazy over. Because talk about
wow.
being able to give away stuff, you know. And we're constantly giving away to missions groups and shelters and people that really are anxious to get their lives back on track. And it's just an absolute joy to be able to share these tools with them, because a lot of them didn't know this stuff was available.
They don't know that this kind of, and for such a low price, too.
Absolutely.
And one thing I found about being tremendous, I'm loving it. You got color pictures in there.
Okay.
There's a DVD video in there that I hadn't seen. Lots of clips that I hadn't seen from there. And you even have something that I just started using that I find cool is the QR code.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling you before we went on the air, our church sermon now is in QR code, so you can save it. And so then because I have it on my phone and you have it in the Being Tremendous book, I was like, oh, wow, I'm going to try this. And so you got so many things. People are stimulated visually and by video and by pictures, and you got it all in that book,
You have
every kind of format of everything in there.
We wanted it to be a smorgasbord. It's really a book, and I know my father, there's a lot about him in it, but the reason I didn't put an author in the book is really the book, who wrote the book is the people that my father met and the books that he read. That is what the book is all about. So it's just a smorgasbord. It's like a visual feast. I mean, if you're planning speeches, there's a ton of funny jokes in there. There's some great jokes. There's his videos in there. There's great little one-liners. There's anecdotes for you guys that got to do speeches or presentation in corporations. I mean, the more parables. It's just if you're a speaker or a teacher or just really going through something in life, I wanted you to be able to turn to any page and get a laugh or a tear in your eye or have just something that really that grabs you, and then you can go back and close it and go back whenever you want. And yes, we wanted the color. We wanted it to be very stimulating and colorful, because that's really how he lived his life, just full of life.
Exactly. And one thing I love about your father, and that you don't see in every speaker, is that he had a tremendously successful life insurance business and did extremely well in sales. I see and know of some speakers who speak, and you don't really know, where their experience came from. And, not everyone's like Zig Ziglar, that was number 3 out of 5,000 or 7,000 or number 2. But your dad had an extremely successful business before he got into the speaking industry. He could have just retired just based on his life insurance business, couldn't he have?
He did, and I really appreciate that you brought that up. We have a lot. He started with Mutual New York, so we have a lot of the early stuff where he started in insurance. But all his talks, and for you guys that are going through stuff in life, either with your family or professional, every one of Dad's points in his talks came from a real-world experience through his work or his family. So when you're out there, and that's why I used to look at people like Zig and my father and go, man, the reason these guys can stand up there and talk it is because they've walked it. They've been there where the customer tells them to get out. They've been through, personal crisis in the family. They've been through, knocking on doors and getting told no. When you've lived it, you have that authenticity, and then you can live about it. And, yeah, he could have retired. But he just started speaking for free to different groups, and it was so entertaining because he'd almost tell these war stories, about work and home life, and people would just laugh because everybody can relate to it. And then it just took off from there.
And not only was he a very successful salesperson, he was in an industry, life insurance. Nobody buys life insurance.
No.
You have to sell it. And you probably get more no's and rejections in that business than any business.
He did, but he loved that insurance. He loved that business. He said how it, just like the free enterprise business, he loved it because it allowed you to earn what you were worth. And I mean, he said one of the lines in the book is he said he finally got out of life insurance and into management because he ran out of friends and relatives to sell policies to. And, you know, any of you guys that has been in sales knows, oh, my gosh, I'm running out of friends and family. You know, you really got to be working that network. And, yeah, life insurance is one of those things about, what do I care? I'm going to be gone or I'll deal with it later. But, I mean, he believed so much in it. And, yeah, it was pretty much inescapable. Just like when you got in his vortex, you were going to buy life insurance and you were getting books too. And if you didn't buy them, you were walking out with a box of them anyway. So he just, he was so passionate about it. It's just, there's no escape.
Now tell me a little bit about your dad and your mom's relationship, because in talks, now you know he's just being funny, and you know he talks about the hard points of life, which are true, like marriage is never easy. But when he talked about it, he made so many jokes. Oh, I would have had more kids, but my wife doesn't like kids. And then other various things where you get a thought, oh my gosh, I don't, doesn't sound like they're going so well at the Jones house there. But they were married a long time, and your mom must have had to give him a good rein because he was busy, he was gone a lot, he was traveling. And so tell me about their amazing relationship.
Oh boy, you really hit the nail on the head. They were married just shy of 61 years before he went home. And he has a lot. The book has a lot about marriage. And he has a lot of funny one-liners, like you said, about he had only had six kids because Gloria didn't like kids. And he would talk a lot about, you know, marriage isn't about compatibility. Gloria and he were the most opposite. And they really were a very, very different personality. But it's about commitment. And once they made a commitment to each other, to support each other, and first and foremost, their faith in Christ, that the marriage was a reflection of Christ's love for us, and he never left us, and they weren't leaving each other. And I mean, he was very, very adamant about that. And they would leave, I have a couple examples of little love notes, and I mean, they went through spells just like everybody else. But Gloria was in such her niche as far as keeping the home fires burning while he was out. You know, I mean, can you imagine if he would come home every night and not have a place to transmit his energy? That would not have been a good fit for him. So it was really a matter of each other respecting each other's talents and then having a basis of faith that when the times got tough, they would, you know, pour out their hearts to something bigger than the two of them. Because, you know, ego says, I'm tired of this. I don't have to put up with this anymore. I'm going. And, you know, when you have something higher that holds you together in anything in life, be it a loyalty to a job or love of a child, you go through it all. And that was it. But there's an awful lot. But one of the lines in there, he would joke and say that my mom, he'd say, Gloria knows who wears the pants in the family. And he'd say, you know, just the other day she came to me on her hands and knees and said, Charles, get out from under that bed and fight like a man, you know, and everybody would just start laughing so hard because he was always like, but trust me, like behind every strong man is a very strong woman. And although Dad teased and laughed and joked, he knew exactly what he had in Gloria and was never disrespected her, the model of integrity, and just loved her with all his heart.
Wow. And another thing I love about your dad, and that not everybody does or is comfortable with who's a speaker, he talked about his faith. He was like Zig Ziglar. Nobody would listen to even one talk by Zig Ziglar or your dad without knowing that they were Christians. There's many speakers, and we know that this is true. People say if you're a speaker or speaking to people, don't talk about politics or religion. But your dad threw that advice right out the window.
Well, he did, and he did it not to be disrespectful. I got letters from atheists, from Buddhists, from Mormons, from Jews, from all people from all religious faiths that respected him because he respected them. And his point was, whatever you're going to live your life for, and this is in the book, Being Tremendous, that's one of the decisions you have to make in your life. Who are you going to live your life for? Is it yourself? Is it God? What is it? And then commit. but be authentic. And that's all he said was, don't waffle. Just, man, live it like you mean it, and then you get respect. It's when you waffle and you question, you try and put somebody else down. Everybody respects everybody that lives genuinely, no matter what they believe, because they're respectful of your beliefs, too. But he really, for him, just like Zig, to stand up in front of people with the unbelievable intensity, and you look at him and you're like, what is that glowing within them? For him not to say it was his belief in Christ and knowing that he was forgiven and would spend an eternity with him, for him to deny that, it'd be like taking his vocal cords out. I think he would have been completely disingenuous, because it gave him such a peace and a confidence and a joy, you know, to walk triumphantly through life, that the end has already been foreseen. The battle has already been conquered. So for him to act, and whether you believe it or not, he believed it with all his heart, and he showed it. And for him to not stand up there and tell people, let them believe, like, well, here's just a guy that really knows how to control his emotions or tell good jokes or does it through his own strength, he would have felt like a complete fraud, because he did not do it on his own power. And he really wanted, it was the people he met, the books he read, you know, from the Bible to Christian businessmen to speakers to other books to biographies, and they were all part of the mix. So it'd be like keeping a secret and not telling anybody, you know,
yeah,
how
the biggest
you were so
secret.
Engaged in life. Yeah, yeah.
Now, tell me, you alluded to it, and I love it. Tell me about those three decisions. Was it three decisions that your dad said you must make in life?
He would say, exactly, and this is in life is tremendous, and it's in being tremendous. He'd say there's only three decisions you have to make in life, and people would say, wait a minute, I already made like 30 today. He's like, those are immaterial. These are three decisions you must make for once and for all, because everything else that you make decision-wise, this will be the framework. The first is, who are you going to spend your life with? Are you going to be single? Are you going to be married? Make a commitment. This is what he talked about with Gloria. Because if you make a commitment, but then it's not really a commitment, you keep thinking there's something better out there, boy, you're going to make mistakes. We've all heard about great people that have made mistakes. And I'm not talking about if you get divorced. I myself have been divorced, several of Dad's kids. But I mean, just either stay in the marriage and stay committed, or if you're divorced, but don't be like, oh, well, I think I can find something better. So, commit to who you're going to spend your life with. And then number two, he said, commit to what you're going to spend your life in. What are you going to do? And, you know, his point was, when you get a job, you want a better job, do a better job. That you can't try out a job just like you can't try out a marriage. A lot of people go into work and say, well, I'll see if it fits me. Well, no job's ever going to work out that way. You have to be very passionate, committed. Now, does that mean you stay in a job forever? No. I've changed careers four times. But as long as you're drawing a paycheck from somebody, you be committed to doing the best job that you can. And if you do that, you will always find better jobs or better bosses or better paychecks, kind of thing. And then again, the third was, who are you going to live your life for? So once you make these three decisions, and again, they can change throughout your life, but due to circumstances. Some people get divorced due to nothing, no fault of their own or nothing that they can do. But make the commitment while you're in it, and then if things change, circumstances or another job opportunity, and you make that leap, just always give it your all. I think that was his really main purpose. And then when new opportunities come, you weigh them against your framework or your three decisions. Is it good for my family? Is it good for my professional career? And is it in keeping with who I'm living my life for? My ethics, my principles. And a lot of times we make the wrong decisions because we make choices that go in direct violation to those three key decisions. Or they change too much. You know, they waffle too much, and then we're kind of on shifting sands, and then we kind of fall for anything.
Yeah, exactly. Was your dad always a Christian, or did it come to him later in life?
No, he got, and in the book, when you go through, you'll hear about this. He got saved when he, I think, it was in 1950, I'm sorry. So he would have been 23. And a guy jumped in his car in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Jim Schelling, and my dad was selling insurance, so he's like, good, somebody's in the car, I can sell him a policy. Well, before he got the chance to sell him a policy, this guy turned to him and said, Charlie, you know, if you died tomorrow, do you know where you'd be? And he just read a couple verses to him. He didn't tell him what to think. He didn't tell him what to believe. He just read some Bible verses to him. And my father went home that night and said, that's it. I'm going to make this decision for once and for all. I'm either going to believe it's a book of myths, or I'm going to believe it is what it is, and I'm going to commit my life to it. And so, no, it wasn't. You'll see in the book, he had been exposed to some wonderful Christian men, but he hadn't made the personal choice until he was about 23.
Wow, was he married?
When it really became real. Yes, he was married. He was married. So, you know, my parents often say, you know, who knows how their life and their marriage would have been had they not gotten that squared away.
Did he tell your mom on it after, or was your mom already?
He did. I think she was saved, because when he came home and said, Gloria, guess what happened to me today? She's like, Charles, that's not funny. Don't you joke about something like that. You know, she was raised in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which was very devout, had a lot of Mennonite influences, so went to church. But, you know, there's going to church and having your faith, and then there's living it. But I think once Dad experienced it and said, I'm going for broke on this, then she really, it awakened her too. I mean, there's nothing like having either a partner in business or a partner in life that shares a passion with you to inspire you to really, you know, pick up the pace and really live it too. So he definitely, his change and his transformation allowed her to really, her faith to really grow too.
Wow. Now, Tracy, you and I are both fans of dogs. I got two dogs. You got a few dogs.
I had three.
A cat. You got what? You got three now. You got a third
three.
One, right?
Mm-hmm. I said I had to bring a bunch of pets. Yeah, three cats, three dogs, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And I like cats as well. I don't have a house where I can have as many. I got two dogs. Maybe we'll get one more.
That's
you're
awesome,
one
huh?
That. The one that everyone or most people are familiar with is Blue. Blue, you've had Blue a long time, haven't you?
I have had Blue since May 8th, 2001, so 11 and a half years. My number one.
And he's a famous dog. He's an author. He speaks on a regular. He speaks more often than I do. He's got more speaking engagements than I do.
Sometimes I go out and people are like, "I've never seen you without the dog talking," and I'm like, "I know, he's the show." Yeah.
And he wears different uniforms at work and different costumes,
he
and he greets people. My goodness.
He's amazing. I mean, dogs, let's face it. You know as well as I do, if people were as tenacious and loyal and hardworking and forgiving and non-judgmental and fun-loving and learning all the time and peaceful as dogs were, the world would be a much different place. And that's kind of the premise from the books. What we can learn, what leadership principles the dogs can teach humans.
Now, does he? I have only seen Blue and Ruby Red at work. Do they love to go to work, or do they sometimes put their paw over their eyes and be like, "Come on, I'm sleeping in today. I'm not going."
They are. Well, there's a lot of beds and toys here at work, so you know, I often said, you know, a couple naps at work here and there, and some toys every now and then. They love it, and you know, they're so happy and laid back. Kind of wherever it is, but you know, dogs love being with you, so the fact that we're a pack 24/7, I'm like the luckiest person in the world, because I get to, you know, read all this great positive material all day, and I get to bring my dogs to work. I mean, I know so many people would just be like, oh, if I could just bring my dog to work,
yeah.
And it isn't that much fun. You know, we have a staff meeting, and they're under the table sleeping, you hear somebody snoring, somebody's laying on your feet, keeping your feet warm, somebody's licking your leg. I mean, it's just... they love it. But I'm telling you, those of you, and you know you have adult dogs, they sleep a lot. They sleep almost as much as cats. Dogs are...
Yeah.
I love it. So they're not running around freaking out all the time. They come and say hi to people, and then they come back and go right back on their beds and go to sleep.
Wow. Now, Ruby Red had a bit of a tough beginning, didn't she? And so you had to kind of acclimate her to all the attention and all the people and the fuss.
She did, and that's what her book is about, getting a second leash on life. And her first home was very not good. She hadn't been socialized and was just used as a breeding dog and was scheduled to be euthanized for aggression issues. So we had to go through a complete transformation, and that's what her book is about, is how hurt can make you better and not bitter. Because a lot of people, like my father, he grew up in a broken home. Eighth grade education, poverty, and that can turn you into a very nasty, mean person that wants to get back in life and feels you're owed something, or it can turn you into a warm person that wants to experience life and make sure nobody ever feels the way you did. This book is about how hurt can make you better and not bitter. But it was a year of a lot of different things. And, you know, we as people deal with a lot of different aggression issues. We're either scared or frightened to change, and we lash out or we run away and hide or we opt out or we ignore or enable.
Mm-hmm.
And this book really deals with those issues and how to address them.
And that's one of Napoleon Hill's principles, learning from adversity and defeat. And, I say unfortunately, but not so much. But unfortunately, that's the one I get to talk on a lot of times at Napoleon Hill events, is the learning from adversity and defeat. But it's so important, as you said, all of us in life at some point, even, you know, having parents die is an adversity. We all have to learn how to channel those adversities without knocking us off the track that we're on. And so such an important book. And so how did you, was there anything special you had to do to get her used to being around people and that she was loved and cared for?
Positive reinforcement, just like with people, to let her know that threats are not threats, they're actually treats. And we had a couple dog whispers, behavioral analysis. We had to try different collars, a lot of repetition, teaching her, you know, there was some sibling rivalry, professional jealousy with the other animals. So we had to teach her that there's enough love in the world to go around. You know, jealousy is all rooted in, you think. Yeah, and you know,
people can learn this too.
Well, it really is, Tom. It does talk about sibling rivalry and professional rivalry at work. If you're jealous of somebody, gets recognized. So what she went through, I mean, it's the dog, but it all translates into people issues, because we've all dealt with these kind of issues too. So I know if you love dogs, it's about how she made the transformation, but it really is principles that we can apply to our lives. So, yeah, we had a series, and it was about a year-long transformation. But, you know, it's all about being around the right people and hearing the right words said to you, and that's how you make. But then, you know, you got to accept it. And she fought it for a while. She had a hard time. There were times where I thought, we can't make this. But I thought, I just looked at her eyes, and I thought, there's no way out. We have got to make this work. And we did.
Wow.
And even now, almost two years into it, every day I watch her eyes get a little softer and happier. Just like people, when you put them in the right situations, you watch them just blossom, you know.
Wow. And one thing I love that I see you do a lot, and I see pictures on Facebook, and it's kind of something I like in the back of my mind, hope that it happens, is that more kids get exposed to success principles, positive attitude, determination, perseverance. And it seems like so many of your speaking engagements, or I guess you're just the escort for the dogs, but so many of the dogs' engagements are with kids, with young people. And so do you have, like, are those books read by kids, or do you have books that are good for kids that teach them principles?
We do. Well, I can remember when I was probably 10, I can remember reading I Dare You by Stephen Danforth, who started Ross and Purina and the Boys and Girls Club in St. Louis. I can remember reading, like, Pilgrim's Progress. I can remember reading How to Win Friends and Influence People at 10. But Blue has a book, that From Underdog to Wonderdog, which is all the adult leadership principles that we talk about in True Blue Leadership, but they're more down to an elementary school age level, because the sooner they learn how to be respectful, smile, not be a bully, that they're responsible for learning new tricks, don't bite the hand that feeds them, work like a dog. The sooner in life they learn these things, the happier their years are going to be. So he does quite a few summer camps, private schools, public schools, elementary school assemblies. I mean, one week I actually went hoarse because we spoke to about 1,200 kids over the course of a week. We just talked ourselves out. And then we go to each classroom and they meet Blue and they talk about what they learn. But that From Underdog to Wonderdog is really, from 10 and under, a wonderful book about the leadership principles shared from Blue. But he talks about, you know, like, don't bite the hand to feed you is like respecting your parents when they feed you, and how many kids don't have stuff to eat, and when your teachers share knowledge, being respectful to them. So I agree. The sooner the better. The sooner the better.
And what a great format to have it in, because, you know, if an adult tells them, you should respect your parents, and you should work hard, and you should do this, they're going to be like, whatever, that's just
we didn't
want to
hear it then. Yeah.
Yeah, but if a dog tells them, you should have heard what this dog told
they
me, this and that.
Tom, he is a rock star. When he goes through the halls of the elementary schools, I hear him busting out of their offices. It's like Beatlemania. I hear him running. Mr. Blue, they start running and yelling because a lot of them have heard him before. And then they get the books, and we get letters. We get fan letters. It's just the most precious thing to see these kids. And they really, really get it. And they write him letters about what they've learned. And even if they can remember one thing in life, 30 years down the road, to say, I remember that lady that came with that dog and she told me this. Hey, I mean, these are the things that made us different in our lives. Just an adult taking time to spend with us, or a dog, petting a dog and thinking, oh, yeah, I want to be nice like Mr. Blue. I don't want to be barking and biting at people. But he's a rock star. You know, he gets through to them in a way that only a dog can. It's the funnest thing I've ever done. It is so much
fun. And one thing I wonder when I look at a lot of these Facebook pages, do they get tired of putting ties on and hats on and
when I put a tie
on
him, I'm telling you what, he gets so pumped up. He gets all like, oh, he gets starts jumping around because he knows he's going to give a speech, you know. And then he's very
like me. He has like a speaking uniform then.
He does. He loves it. So he just gets all, and you know, once he gets there, they're all hanging on him and stuff. So it's fun.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Tracy. As you know, I love your dad, and I love the work you're doing and all those little books. I got all of them. I read almost all of them. And so there's so many ways and places people can buy personal development books these days, but please, listeners, please check out Tremendous Life Books. There's not a lot of dollar books that you can buy that can impact your life and that you can give away and impact other people's lives. And then there's just so many great titles you have on there. So thank you so much for your great work, and thank you for that being tremendous. It's what an amazing production and publication that is, and I know I'm going to love going through it.
You're welcome, Tom. Thank you for everything you do, too.
Have a great day, and say hi to Blue and Ruby Red.
I sure will, Tom. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.